Welcome to episode 39 of Mental Health by TalkLink. Here's what's coming up.
The COVID situation, the lockdown situation, has really shined a light on things that aren't going well for people in their life.
Hi, I'm Rowan, and today we're speaking with Dr. Di Stowe, the president of the Psychotherapy and Counselling Federation of Australia, also called PACFA. PACFA is a leading national peak body and professional association for counsellors and psychotherapists in Australia and represents over 4,500 registered members. Dr. Di also runs her own private counselling practice in Hobart, Tasmania, working with a lot of grief and loss, anxiety, depression, and many other issues. Today's podcast is brought to you by talklink.com.au, a modern and approachable mental health directory helping Australians connect with the right mental health practitioner. All of the practitioners, so that's psychologists, psychotherapists, and counsellors, are available to see clients straight away, so no waiting lists. They're all independent, licensed, and insured, and available for online or in-person consultations. In fact, you can find many excellent clinicians on talklink.com.au who are registered with PACFA. The great thing about TalkLink is that you can see a short video of the therapist to get to know them a little, check out their training and experience, as well as their pricing in a transparent way to decide whether this is someone that you would like to connect with. Okay, let's dive in. Dr. Di Stowe, it's great to have you with us today.
Yeah, I'm really delighted to be here.
So I understand currently you have many hats, but one of them is the hat of the president of PACFA.
Yep.
Maybe let's start with that. Tell us a little bit about PACFA. What do you do?
Yeah, PACFA, the Psychotherapy and Counselling Federation of Australia, is a member organisation of approximately 4,500 members around Australia, around the country, represented in every state and territory. We're made up of registered counsellors, registered psychotherapists, and registered Indigenous healing practitioners. We're really excited about the latter group that I mentioned, the Indigenous health practitioners, because only maybe a year or so ago, we were able to form that group as a college in PACFA and take great heart and great learning from the practices of our Indigenous colleagues. Very much in the vein of counselling and psychotherapy practices, broadly speaking, but with their own particular nuances and that gorgeous storytelling through groups, through one-on-one, through dance, through art, and many other excellent ways of working with people that group, our Indigenous colleagues, can offer in to the good work. Indeed, the great work that counsellors and psychotherapists in PACFA are doing for Australians.
When you talk about Indigenous practitioners, I've got all these ideas that pop in my mind. Maybe help me form some of those ideas. What is a Indigenous? I've never heard of that. What does an Indigenous practitioner do and who do they work with?
So Indigenous practitioners are Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people, people who identify as Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander, and they're working in counselling, they're working in psychotherapy, but with the added value, indeed the value add of being familiar with their traditional Indigenous practices. And I mentioned around storytelling. Can I give you an example? I had an interview with Black Radio in Queensland. I spoke to this marvellous guy, Trevor, out of Cairns. And Trevor is an Indigenous man and he's not a counsellor, he's not a psychotherapist, he's not an Indigenous health practitioner. And yet just his beautiful style of interacting, the language of, we've got Dr. Di here, we're going to have a yarn, she's going to tell us about storytelling. She's going to talk about what counsellors do, how they listen to people's stories to help them make sense of what their problem is or what their issue is or what's going on in their world. It was a great conversation. I felt like I'd known Trevor for years. And so I guess that's kind of the nuance or what Indigenous practices can bring to a counselling, to a psychotherapeutic situation. It's another way of connecting. It's not necessarily deeper or better, but just another way. And given that counsellors, psychotherapists are working with individuals which are all different by virtue of their humanness, their individuality, it's just great to have that value add, which might help some people make breakthroughs in their things they're working on, things they're worried about.
I'd be curious to see how the organisation and psychotherapy and counselling in a broader sense takes lessons from what we learn from an Indigenous, almost, it's almost like a modality, a way of treatment.
Yeah. Well, as I practice as counsellor in Hobart, my special area is grief and loss, even though I'm doing a lot of work with anxiety and depression, particularly in these COVID times. Anxiety for people is very high across the community, and it's great that people are coming to seek support. I'm really up for learning from my Indigenous colleagues, nuancing my own practice, adding value to the way that I work, which I believe in the way I work, but always wanting to learn more from our traditional owners. PACFA, in fact, is groundbreaking with regard to embracing Indigenous healing practices. And we're excited and wanting to claim that, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like a great idea. I have a million questions down that line, but I do want to come back to PACFA and your role in PACFA. And I guess you've just talked about your own practice, but at the same time, you're the president of PACFA.
Yes, I'm the president of PACFA, and I've been the president now. Gosh, this is my fifth year, so I'm really engaged and still full of good energy for what PACFA's doing for counsellors and psychotherapists and Indigenous healers across the country, but also really my heart is what counsellors can do for the Australian public. Very often counselling is a great option early on when people are worried, concerned about issues, and they have difficulty getting into, say, psychologists because the waiting list is so long. People can get appointments with counsellors. We did a survey recently of our members, and 60% of our registered members are able to see a person for the first time in something like 2 weeks. And in a crisis situation, we can see 23% of our members can see people in 48 hours. That's excellent in terms of allowing people easy access and quick access to start talking about their issues, concerns, worries, getting their stories told, getting some tips, techniques, ideas, strategies, support around making some breakthroughs. And maybe a few appointments early on will actually help the client to not get sicker as they go down the track waiting for an appointment with somebody else.
Yeah, we are hearing that most psychologists have waiting lists in the order of 2, some of them even up to 8 months. And it seems like a very strange place, because right now there's a lot of people who are experiencing deep psychological distress and anguish. There's a lot of changing circumstances. And so, you know, the government in Australia at least is throwing money at the problem by increasing the number of Medicare rebates. And the conversation about mental health is escalating. Everyone wants to talk about mental health. But there's this odd thing that exists, and I'd love you to talk about it, because in Australia, if you want to go talk to someone about a mental health issue, you have 4 options. You can speak with a counsellor, a psychotherapist, a psychologist, or a psychiatrist. And actually, there should be a fifth basket for maybe, you know, the sorts of things we've just talked about, Indigenous healers, and there is another cache. But broadly speaking, there are those 4. So the Medicare rebate in Australia applies for psychiatrists and psychologists, but not for counsellors and psychotherapists. Can you talk about your thoughts and, I guess, PACFA's view on what that means? Because it has resulted in psychologists having this huge backlog. Finding a psychologist to talk to right now in Australia is extremely difficult. We've got a couple up on our platform, but usually they have massive waiting lists. Whereas we're seeing this extremely experienced group of professionals and clinicians like yourself. You've got a doctorate or PhD, you're a counselor. And that group of psychotherapists and counselors are not seeing as many patients because they don't have the rebates. Can you just talk about that a little bit and what PACFA's views and maybe your personal views are on that?
Yes. This has been part of our advocacy, this issue of Medicare item numbers for counselors and psychotherapists, and our membership has been a continuing advocacy that I've been busy with, and our CEO's been busy with, our organisation's been busy with for a few years now. Actually, there's another group. Social workers can also get Medicare rebates for aspects of the work that they're doing.
Actually, you are right. So there are mental health nurses and mental health social workers. You're absolutely right. Yeah, sorry.
I'm not sure that mental health nurses have got Medicare item numbers, but maybe that's changed and I'm not quite up to date with that. Regards PACFA's view, PACFA wants counsellors, registered counsellors, accredited counsellors, we're a self-regulating body, to be able to access Medicare item numbers for the greater good of the Australian population. Absolutely, it will benefit counsellors in the workforce, but our heart, our work is for the help that it'll make to the mental health crisis across the country at the moment, largely because of the pandemic. So we want people to be able to access counselling, as I was mentioning a few minutes ago, sooner rather than later, to start getting some traction on solving problems and support, talking through issues around anxiety, depression, talking through issues around grief and loss, working on domestic violence, helping people with suicide ideation, challenging issues around addictions. We're advocating for temporary Medicare item numbers relating to telehealth, let's say, with a program that might mean that we've got three appointments that people can access. We haven't got the details. In fact, I think the details get us caught up in actually rolling out programs. Counsellors are available to help and work and assist with the mental health issues around the country in all states and territory right now, and the stats I've indicated earlier. One of the things with our psychologist colleagues is the long waiting lists, 3 to 4 months right across the country. Some psychologists have closed their books till 2022, and it's not dissimilar for our psychiatrist colleagues. It may be that their waiting lists are even longer, and it's just too long for people to have to wait. My colleagues, my psychologist colleagues and my psychiatrist colleagues would absolutely agree with me. The workforce numbers aren't there to support appointments earlier. So it really makes sense to access counselling, psychotherapy, Indigenous practitioners to assist with the workforce issues around serving the Australian population in this manner. So we've liaised with government. Government are really happy to talk with us. We've liaised with government bureaucrats who are also really happy to talk with us. We've been promoting education around counselling and psychotherapy. We've been running press releases in support of government initiatives. And, of course, Medicare item numbers aren't the only thing, although it does acknowledge and recognise the work of counsellors for sure, and put them in the public arena of, counselling equals mental health support, psychotherapy equals mental health support. Is that helpful in terms of chatting about that particular matter?
Absolutely. And I really do hope that you're successful in this conversation.
Yeah.
I think it's such an important role that counsellors and psychotherapists have. We have this interesting perspective because we're ultimately a space where we connect mental health clinicians with clients, right? So we get to see a lot of data. So we see pricing data, but we also see behavioral data. And one of the interesting things that I was thinking about the other day was I saw the general price for a psychologist on our platform is around $192 is the average price for a psychologist. A counselor tends to charge around the $110 mark. So there's about an $80 difference, and the Medicare rebate is $84. Yeah. So I think part of the conversation is also an educational role, because if you go see a psychologist, you'll only get that $84 rebated, and so you're still out of pocket, you know, that $110. Whereas if you go see a counselor, you may only have to pay that $110, you know, plus or minus. Everyone has their own fee and they're entitled to that. Yeah. But often it ends up being about the same price.
Yeah. That's a very interesting and accurate observation. And indeed, counselors like myself and my colleagues, psychotherapists, are eligible for private health rebates. So if people are in that position of having private health, they'll get a rebate, maybe $35, let's say, broadly speaking, for a first consult, and $30 after that, and continuing until, you know, their particular fund arrangement runs out. I also appreciate that not everybody's in a position to have private health, which is why it would be useful to have the Medicare, the government support.
Could you tease apart the difference between a psychotherapist and a counsellor? Because a lot of people are very confused by this. What's the difference?
Yes. That's a question that gets asked a lot. And in fact, our membership talk about that a lot in terms of really strong and robust and important conversations. The difference is in the training. And I'll repeat that for emphasis. The difference between counselling and psychotherapy, the difference between a counsellor and a psychotherapist, is in the training. So, for example, some institutions offer a master's in counselling and psychotherapy, and there might be a couple of units on psychotherapy. That, in terms of PACFA's standards, in terms of registering clinical psychotherapists, that doesn't match up a couple of subjects with our standards to be a psychotherapist. It's a bit like if you do a Bachelor of Medicine, you might do a couple of units in psychiatry, but you can't call yourself a psychiatrist. And it's about doing additional training in terms of a particular psychotherapy expertise or training indeed, that will qualify you for registration for clinical psychotherapy, say in PACFA. The difference is in the training, not necessarily in the work in the therapy room. Counsellors do counselling. Counsellors also do psychotherapy. Psychotherapists do psychotherapy, and they certainly do counselling. From the point of view of, say, Carl Rogers, beautiful relational work around empathy, around unconditional positive regard, those qualities around listening and cognitive alignment, welcoming the person to the room and listening to their story and what's working in the room. Counsellors and psychotherapists both work in that regard. The difference is in the training.
So on the point of training, who can call themselves a counsellor / psychotherapist, and what's involved in becoming a registered member with PACFA?
Okay, so with PACFA, we have clinical members with bachelor's degrees, master's degrees, and PhDs. That would be similar for both counsellors and both psychotherapists. Psychotherapists, for their training, also have, counsellors do too, but psychotherapists have a much deeper responsibility around personal therapy work. So that would be a consideration in terms of this training standards for psychotherapy. So, for example, PACFA has training standards for both counselling and psychotherapy. And at the moment, there's a scope of practice, in fact, too, for counselling, which is important because that allows counsellors to refer to other mental health practitioners as appropriate. You might even say, like, I work as a counsellor, as I've highlighted. I did my PhD, Doctor of Philosophy, in grief and loss. So my specialist area is grief and loss because I've done extra training in grief and loss, and I'm still registered very happily as a counsellor.
Right, right. If you've done a course in counselling, let's say you've done a Cert 4 in counselling, can you become a registered PACFA member?
No, no. PACFA doesn't recognise diploma courses.
But you can still advertise yourself online as a counsellor.
Yeah, this is a bit of an issue, actually, and it's really good to talk about it. PACFA has accredited counsellors, accredited psychotherapists, accredited Indigenous healing practitioners. And it is the case that people across the country might do a course, they might do a diploma course. It's very tricky to know the quality of diploma courses. They might be a weekend course, they might be a very short course. And professionally, I, PACFA or otherwise, I actually don't think people are well enough equipped with that small amount of let's say, training, that small amount, if any, of actually face-to-face role-playing supervised practice to work with people. It is a thing that you can put a shingle up and say you're a counsellor, but we're talking at PACFA about accredited counsellors, clinical counsellors, and we, in fact, are just about to announce a trademarking for clinical counsellors, clinical psychotherapists, and that will be a real bonus because the general public will know who they're getting. They'll know that they're getting people who've met training standards, who've signed off and are appropriately ethically recognised, people who are having ongoing supervision, ongoing professional development, ongoing learning, people who are networking, a member of an excellent peak body for counsellors and psychotherapists. They're the people that the people of Australia can feel confident to go to. They're the people that the government can feel confident to be supporting. They're the people who have identical, albeit nuanced, qualifications to our psychologist colleagues. In fact, that reminds me to say that we're not working against psychologists. I've got many colleagues who are psychologists, and our aim is to work alongside other allied professional health people in the area, mental health nurses included, social workers included. We just want to be in the mix to help address the mental health issues that Australia's facing at the moment.
Actually, let's talk about that specifically. Where do you see psychologists and counsellors in the mix? Where in the jigsaw puzzle of supporting Australians with their mental health do you see them sitting relative to psychologists then?
So there's a range of areas that counsellors are really helpful for. And I mentioned some of them earlier. Areas such as family therapy, relationship work, areas such as grief and loss, anxiety, depression, areas like abuse, alcohol, drugs, gambling, where people can have a chance to tell their stories. Did I say natural disasters? When we have a natural disaster in our country, counsellors are the first port of call. Counsellors that are working in maybe not-for-profit organisations like Anglicare, like Salvation Army, like those kind of groups that employ counsellors, they're the first port of call. Employee assistance programs where people can tell their story and get some therapy work through talking therapy, through actually sharing what's been going on for them, and get some feedback, support, some different ways of working with clients, some tips, techniques, support, strategies, help to see them through those early days of expressing difficulty, actually summoning up the courage to come and see a counsellor. Counsellors like psychologists work with therapies like CBT, like EMDR, I won't kind of keep using in acronyms, but there is a similarity with some of the therapies that counsellors and psychotherapists use, similar to psychologists. Psychotherapists would also have a capacity to work for longer periods of time with people and work out purpose and meaning of life. Not to say that counsellors can't do that either.
So what sorts of issues or mental health challenges would someone perhaps be better off seeing a psychologist for as opposed to a counsellor psychotherapist?
That's a good question. Psychologists do lots of testing and testing, depression scales, for example, can be really useful to track a client's mood and therefore tailor the therapy to where the person is at as a consequence of information and guidance that can come up through psychological testing. So that would be one area that I could pick up. Counsellors are also working with clients with eating disorders, and maybe it's something about specialist areas. So if there are psychologists working in states and territories that have got particular expertise, maybe those people are the ones to seek out. Maybe that's another angle or another way of looking at it, rather than saying counsellors are better or psychotherapists are better or psychologists are better.
We've just spoken to a professor about borderline personality disorders, and we've done a deep dive into narcissistic personality disorder, antisocial personality disorder, psychopaths. Can counsellors formally, or a psychotherapist formally, diagnose someone with one of those?
No. Counsellors wouldn't, in my experience, be diagnosing such, and I would wanting to be referring if I was working with a client that I believe was exhibiting some of those traits, I would want to be referring that person to a psychiatrist, for example. And that's part of the scope of practice. It's about knowing boundaries. It's about counsellors being fully cognizant and aware of what their scope of practice actually is and the boundaries around that, and then referring on so that the person, the client, the patient, depending on the language, can actually get the best care for them with the best person available. And certainly with regard to medication, medications to support some personality aspects, or indeed anxiety, depression. In my own work, I might work with a client to see how they're tracking with their anxiety, whatever their story might be, how they, check in, are they depressed indeed, and work out that, and then wonder with them about seeing a GP, if they haven't done already, to get some support medication, to maybe have a 3-month trial on some medication, and then be working with a counsellor or with a psychologist indeed, to help them get back on track, to see if that's a model that can assist that person. I don't want to give an impression that this is just cover-all and a counsellor or a psychotherapist can do all things for all people. It's a matter of helping and working where we can in terms of our qualifications, in terms of our boundaries and scope of practice, and absolutely knowing when to refer on.
One of the great things about having these conversations is that I can have, really deep dives with experts in their field on mental health. And one of the themes that I've just noticed is when I speak with a lot of, people who've really achieved amazing things in their lives in the space of mental health, very often they'll have their own personal crises and they'll reach out to mental health support. And I think that's really interesting for many, many reasons. But amongst others, I'm intrigued by who would you reach out for? If you're a professor of psychiatry and you're going through a crisis, who do you go to talk to? And Dr. Dye, it is probably no surprise to you, but I have seen a theme in that many people will reach out to counselors for struggles along the lines of depression, anxiety, managing relationships, major life changes, they'll continually go back to counselors specifically, and maybe I should say slash psychotherapist, to help them talk through that. They have told me that they felt psychologists were maybe a little bit more clinical and a little bit more formal, and they felt like they could just have a bit more of a direct chat to a counselor. I mean, how does that sound to you and what you've seen in your practice?
Yeah, that's really interesting, and I'm smiling. And the reason I'm smiling is because what you're saying really does resonate with me. I'm an accredited supervisor with PACFA, which means that I've got qualifications around knowing how to supervise. And I'm very fortunate to have a number of supervisees, many of whom are indeed doctors, specialists, many of whom are indeed psychologists, many of whom are other counsellors, many of whom are people in the community who seek supervision from a counsellor, not necessarily counselling. In fact, they're obviously quite different. I think there is something about holding the space for people to debrief their work, share what's going on for them, be encouraging, reminding of things they already know in terms of self-care, being available to be there for them in that professional role as a supervisor. I think it's always really good, however, to talk to supportive colleagues if that's available and appropriate. And I guess, you know, we're human and there are some people that we would prefer to talk to or naturally orient to talk to than others. Maybe, you know, the networks like LinkedIn or indeed professional associations, just connecting with colleagues doing similar work. And maybe it's not, you know, well, it's obviously not structured supervision, but maybe the debrief is really useful. Maybe there's a responsibility for us allied health people to just check in with our colleagues in the vein of, are you okay? And being ready to listen to the answer. And if people don't seem to be okay, maybe offer them your ear or refer them on or be constructively supportive. I'm very interested that your comments resonate my own experience in Tasmania.
Yeah, that's great. I mean, so I'm an engineer and I'm not a mental health trained expert, but I can ask questions. And I guess in my world as an engineer, I'm very solution oriented. So I'd be curious to get your thoughts, because the impression that I get looking in from the outside is that counselors have more flexibility to potentially become more solution oriented. They can say it like it is. Whereas I'm wondering, I got the impression, right or wrong, you know, if someone takes exception to this, then please let me know. I'm here to learn. But I get the impression that psychologists are far more regulated and they've got lots of protocol on how they can and can't speak to clients, whereas counselors have a little bit more flexibility and where they professionally feel like it's appropriate to maybe be more direct, they've got the space to do that. Do you think there's some truth in that?
Yeah, you know, I'm enjoying this conversation because, you know, I'm actually thinking about the answers as we're talking, and interesting things are coming up for me. I'm not registered as a psychologist. I'm registered as a counsellor, and I'm very proudly registered as a counsellor. So I don't really want to speak about psychologist practice per se, other than the more generalised comments I was making earlier, because I don't know it. I work with, I'm in a busy practice and we have psychologists and I have my colleagues in the next door rooms, but we don't necessarily talk deeply about the kind of thing that you're alluding to per se. As a counsellor, however, I don't presume to tell people what to do. In fact, as I'm talking with you this morning, I'm thinking, I hear myself saying this in my therapy room, that maybe these aren't the exact words, but the essence of, it's not my job to tell you what to do. It's not appropriate for me to tell you what to do, because I can't presume to sit in the chair that you're sitting in. But what we can do is wonder about possibilities together. wonder about solving problems with a solution-focused presentation. We can do CBT in terms of helping thoughts to change, thinking to change. We can talk about language, the beauty and the power of language. We can talk about reframing, using language to reframe, to give ourselves a new story. All of that actually is very encouraging in the sense of people being able to make some choices about what they're going to do next, or choose to work through looking at something a little differently. My language, depending on the person, might be of a new chapter. Let's create a new story, seeing what skills and what we might role model in the room, the talking of that, the sharing of a conversation with another party. So I guess there is license and a bit more, maybe a greater license and greater freedom to talk more easily and be encouraging, and for the person to take away some ideas that then they're going to make their own mind up about. Is that helpful? Does that make sense?
Yeah, it is. And I can only imagine, you know, in a clinical context, when you have clients walking through the door, you're dealing with such a broad range of people and they communicate in such different ways and they need such different things. I think what you've mapped out now is a helpful basis for our listeners to maybe get a sense on how you may approach engaging and communicating with that client.
Well, it's so important to work with what's in the room rather than have preconceived ideas. So I work with specialists, for example, who refer their patients to me, and they, and we might talk on the phone and have a bit of a pre-me meeting the person conversation. They might write a letter of referral, all of which I take great notice of. And at the same time, I really want to hear the story from the person. So everyone's individual. I'll be making my own judgments. I mean, I've been working as a counsellor for 20 or so years, so I'm very privileged to work with people and very familiar with ways and means of, well, of working with a person, let alone getting them to open up or share or what. And I think the working with what's in the room and the techniques and theories, therapies will change depending on the person.
I'd love to have like a Dr. Dye pair of glasses that I can just put on and see people through your 20 years of experience and training. I bet you'd see some really cool stuff and you just have to be like, no, I'm at a party. No, I'm at a friend's house. It's not my job. I'm just not going to. Does that happen to you? Do you go out and you just see things and you're like, I wish I can unsee that?
No. Actually, I have my boundaries in really good place. So when I'm at a party, I'm at a party.
Yeah. But you still see it, right? Because you're still human and you're trained to.
Yes, of
like,
course.
Oh, they should go see some couples counselling. There's some serious issues there.
I certainly wouldn't be saying that. I'd be just keeping that to myself, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or indeed, as appropriate and not at a party, I might suggest that if I was chatting with somebody just casually and they seem to be in trouble, I might recommend that they go see someone else or talk to someone. Of course I would, yeah. Yeah, but I don't make it my business to go around.
I would love to have a day wearing your glasses and just seeing the world through your eyes. I might, yeah.
I'm able to do the work I do. I love it. And, it's really important. I really want to be the best I can be for each person as they come into the room. So that's really important. I mean, I do my own supervision with a one-on-one supervisor. I have group supervision. I do in my pack for work talk with colleagues right across the country all the time. We might be talking about training standards, we might be talking about ethics, we might be talking about research, but there's still that collegial support. I have a group of pack for colleagues in Tasmania. We meet once a month and people can come for dinner if they can make it, and if they can't, they can't, and they come the next month. And so we talk about, not necessarily, we don't talk about cases per se because it's confidential and private, and we all honour that. That's, you know, how could I do my work in any other way? But there's a sense of common knowing what we're holding for people, knowing what good work we're doing for the clients that come to see us.
Yeah. It is special, and that's what you would expect to hear from someone who is about to open their heart and soul to a professional. You want to know that they're trained, that they've got that network of support, that they're not on the edge themselves, that they've got capacity.
And also how brave it is for people to come to a counselling appointment in the first place. Very often people, the first time, and they'll say, I'm not sure why I'm here now. It seemed like a good idea at the time, and I'm not sure what to say. And there are skills and, you know, our colleagues across the country have got those skills to help people unfold their story and take on board some ideas in terms of how to move forward. Yeah. One of the big things in the country at the moment, of course, is the big work in suicide prevention. And I was doing a bit of work. I did a press release last week on Are You Okay Day. And one of the things that I've been finding personally interesting is that suicide rates across the country, despite COVID and the incredible challenges for states in lockdown and the country in general, is that the suicide rates have more or less stayed the same. And I take heart in those rates not increasing, big heart. I think people are more available to go and seek mental health support. And I think mental health support is really assisting people to work through those really challenging ideations and things that go with that. What do you think about that?
I'm really glad you brought that up, and we did touch on this beforehand. So I think it's such an important conversation to have. When I looked at that data, so I'll link it in the show notes, but we're basically referring to the Australian Institute of Health and Welfare publishing this report. So the data split into two groups. There's confirmed suicides and then there's suspected suicides. And I guess, you know, we're going to talk about suicide now. So if it's something that's sensitive to you, now might be a time to skip forward. Contact Lifeline if you need to have a chat to someone. They're an amazing crisis center. So, okay, the data split into two parts, confirmed and suspected. And the suspected data came out across the lockdown period and there was no change in the data. So suspected suicides in Victoria for 2020 was 713. For 2019, it was 720. For 2018, it was 702. For 2017, it was 689. So broadly speaking, the experts say it's about level, it's about flat. The bit that was missing for me was the confirmed suicides for the lockdown period hasn't come out yet. It looks like they're still needing to sharpen their pencils on that. Do you think, from what you've seen, that the confirmed suicides might paint a different picture?
The way I'm reading that data that you're referring to, I'm thinking that the numbers are going to stay approximately the same. I think it's important not to get too caught up on numbers per month. But look maybe at yearly stats.
There was another part of the report that talked about psychological distress and measuring psychological distress. And I think the philosophy is, I mean, you're the expert in the space, so correct me, but the way I interpret it was that psychological distress could lead directly to suicides. So it's sort of like a leading indicator. And I mean, you're nodding your head, so I think it's a good sign. I'll keep going. So they looked at this score called the K6 score, which was a way of testing psychological distress. And they say that they have seen psychological distress change. Distress in April 2021 was 9.7%, which was similar to January, which was 9.4%, but that's up significantly from pre-COVID. And so they're saying maybe the psychological distress can trigger suicides down the road. And so maybe we've got this wave coming or this tension building that we should be aware of. I mean, I don't know if you have any thoughts on that.
Yeah. My thoughts are absolutely that we should be, as a country, as a government, we should be watching this closely and taking notice of it. And, you know, I don't want to go back over the things that we were talking before, but getting as many mental health practitioners on the ground as we can to support people who are presenting in psychological distress.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the numbers are really sobering when you look at the proportions. We spoke to Dr. Zach Snyder, who's a lead clinical educator at Movember, and we talked about the fact that there's a huge asymmetry between male and females. 3/4 of suicides are men, so 75%.
Yes. Those stats are very startling, but accurate.
Yeah, and that 2/3 of suspected suicides are occurring in metropolitan areas, which was a pause point for me because I'd always been under the assumption that rural areas would be harder struck, but it seems like that pain and suffering is everywhere and just as real in metro.
Yes, pain and suffering is everywhere and just as real in the cities. I have a colleague who edits a community newspaper in rural Tasmania, and I talk with him about exactly what we're talking about, and we're about to run some articles and education around mental health support for the rural community, practical tips and ideas that people can take on board, but also advertising lifelines and advertising groups where people can reach out if they can't get an appointment with a mental health person one-on-one, face-to-face.
Yeah. Look, it's tough times. We're talking in September 2021, and I think Victoria's just hit over 230 days in lockdown. People feeling isolated, their work circumstances have changed significantly or are not secure. Families are in tension because they're crammed into small spaces together. There's anxiety and stress at high levels. I mean, do you see this in your practice?
Absolutely. That's what I'm seeing in my practice. So even in Tasmania, not being in lockdown is difficult. And I say this with great care because not being in lockdown seems pretty okay. In Tasmania, not being in lockdown means that you can't get to your loved ones, your family and friends on the mainland who are in lockdown. And being in lockdown is absolutely terrible. People have been locked in lockdown for such a long time. And validating the difficulty and acknowledging the difficulty, I think, is in a meaningful way, as I'm doing, is really important. So I see people in my practice who are starting to wonder about special days, how they're going to manage another Christmas where they're missing their children, their grandparents. People come to talk about loneliness of not being able to connect, not meeting their new grandbaby, not being able to participate in the grieving and the celebration of loved ones who've died. This is really real, and this actually causes people distress. And then, of course, it triggers off other things in life that were managed by just getting on with it or something or other activities or something. But the COVID situation, the lockdown situations, it has really shined a light on things that aren't going well for people in their life.
Yeah. I mean, what you're saying makes total sense. It's heavy across the board for everyone. We're in a global pandemic.
Yes.
I want to go back to a part of a conversation we had earlier. So with the lockdowns, a lot of the mental health support is happening online with telehealth, which is a fancy word for online, so via Zoom or another secure link. If someone is struggling to connect, or I guess in Australia we're seeing this shortage of mental health professionals across the board, what are your thoughts and what's PACFA's views on opening the world up? There's a lot of the world that's English speaking. Would PACFA consider taking on members from other countries? What would the requirements be for them to join PACFA? And then are they allowed to see Australian clinicians, patients?
That's a really big topic and a really great question. And I must say, because we've been working hard to sort stuff in our own country at various levels in the sense of making sure our members are all accredited and registered and sorted and are working, able to work well with clients, it's not something we've thought about. I'm actually one of the directors of the International Association for Counselling. And so I have lots of conversations. Once a month we have a meeting. So I'm talking to colleagues all over the world. So I know for a fact that we're actually all talking about the same things. So I'm talking to colleagues in Ireland, in America, in South America. We're talking the same language, the same topics are hot. We're talking ethics, we're talking training standards, we're talking the workforce challenges of actually working face-to-face and the predominance of, you know, telehealth in the sense of either counselling or GP or specialist.
Let me give you a very specific example. Let's maybe take this as a case study. So if you have, let's say you've studied counselling in Australia, but you're from another country. And with the lockdowns and the madness, you went back to home, wherever that may be. But your training was in Australia. You hold an Australian, at least a bachelor or more. You speak English perfectly. Is there any reason why you couldn't join PACFA and offer online support to Australian clients from your country, wherever you're living now?
If you were a member of PACFA, you could absolutely do that.
Could you join PACFA, even though your residency is in the UK or the US?
Our members have to fulfill certain obligations in order to be members. And if they fulfill those obligations, membership is confirmed. So if they were working online from another country, I can't see any problem with that. I'm just thinking that through. It feels, for some reason, it feels like a trick question, but it shouldn't be. And I know
I'm not trying to trap you with this. I'm honestly.
No. No,
you know, we're having these conversations with clients and clinicians all the time. Yeah. If you have a thought after this conversation.
I went to live in London and I'm a registered PACFA person. I could talk on the phone with clients in Australia. That would be allowed.
Yep. Well, yeah. I'm asking, yeah.
Just what I do when I'm on holidays, if I've got client appointments. I talk to them online, even if I'm in another country.
Is an Australian degree a requirement for PACFA?
We would look at what the person's qualifications are and determine it accordingly.
Fair enough. So case by case?
Yeah, case by case, yeah.
I guess from our perspective, you know, we live in the web. We live on the cloud and we're wondering, well, if you're a trained clinician, why couldn't you also support people overseas or vice versa? And we've been wondering how COVID and the lockdowns and the forcing of supporting people online is going to change the landscape for counselling in an international context.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. No, very, very valid. Very valid questions and interesting perspectives. Yeah.
Particularly because the Medicare rebate is not an option that counsellors have right now. So you're not at an advantage or a disadvantage from seeing overseas clients. All you need is to have access to that space. And, you know, there are online platforms, I should probably not name them, that offer online counselling. And many of their counsellors are based internationally. So as an Australian, you can call in, you can get support, and now you're speaking to someone in another country.
Yeah, I suppose my question would be, are those counsellors accredited, and do we know the validity of their qualifications? Now, you know, they're members of professional associations that accredit them. You know, that would be my concern, that they're well enough qualified and fulfilling supervision and fulfilling continuing professional development so that they're safe, so that the client's safe to work with them.
Yeah. I think that is the right question to ask when you pour your heart and your soul open and you disclose very personal information. You want to make sure that the person you're doing that to is ethical.
It's critical. It's critical. Yeah.
Yeah. Does PACFA have a blacklist for people who they feel are not appropriate? Does that ever happen?
I'm not sure about not appropriate, but people who don't meet the requirements, we wouldn't have them as members. So we don't really have language like you're describing. So you apply and you either get in or you don't. But the reason you don't get in is because of the level of qualifications, for example.
Dr. Dye, I'm conscious of time. Your insights and thoughts have been amazing. I feel like we can keep going.
Look, it's 5:10. We've been going on for ages and I have to go and do another interview. I'm thinking I've said just about all the things I'd like to say.
Well, thank you very much for joining us today and sharing your thoughts.
Okay, see you later.
Okay, well, that's it for today. We hope that you've enjoyed this conversation. If you'd like to connect with a therapist, head over to talklink.com.au. See you soon.